Sandy Murphy didn't expect the transformation, but it happened. After spending 16 years in the BPO business, she decided to have a go with starting up her own BPO. But in leading her new organization, she started looking at things differently. And now, her mission is to change the way customer engagement professionals are treated. In today's episode, we touch on how cloud-based systems have lowered the barrier to entry for starting a new BPO, how low overhead allows for higher agent pay, hiring and promoting people who care, leading with kindness and heart, the impacts of leading through fear, and the importance of having clients that align with your culture. Let's get to it.
Welcome to Next in Queue, the podcast for contact center and customer experience professionals. Next in Queue is brought to you by HappyCare, your service team's personal coach, giving them the process, resources, and insights to deliver the perfect customer experience over the phone. Learn more at HAPPITU.com. Now, here's your host, Rob Dwyer.
Thank you, everyone, for joining another episode of Next in Queue today. It is my pleasure to be joined by Sandy Murphy, who is the founder and CEO of CXtimer. Welcome, Sandy. How are you?
Thank you, Rob. I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I am fantastic. I am on cup number two of coffee, so that's keeping me going.
Nice, nice. You're way ahead of me. But yeah, I appreciate you asking me to join in, and I'm looking forward to chatting today.
So we're going to talk about your business and leading with heart and kind of what that looks like. But before we do that, I always like to go back to the beginning and find out, how did you get into this business?
Of course. And there's so many great stories. It's a really good question, because you find so many people in the contact center industry and nobody sets out and says, oh, I want to be a call center professional when I grow up. So I was in the culinary industry for a while, and recession hit, thought I was going to, you know, just work on a, you know, a contact center job for a couple of months and then, you know, peace out of there. But I fell in love with it. I started the first program I ever worked on. I don't know if you remember, and this kind of dates me, but it was Pitney Bowes postage meters, just slinging those, and then moved into quality assurance. And there's just so many paths that the contact center industry has, and now there's even more paths, that it's just a tremendous opportunity for anyone who wants to try things out, see what they like, and figure out what path they want to go on. So from there, I moved into different areas of operation. And I'm actually from a very small farm town in Ohio, where one of the call centers were located, and I had the opportunity to move to Columbus, Ohio, which for some isn't a huge city, but for me, it was, you know, the Big Apple kind of business. So I moved here and worked at the corporate office of the contact center that I was working at previously, and moved into an account manager type role, and then moved into business development pretty quickly. But I love the people that make up the industry. There's so many amazing, talented, incredible folks from all walks of life. And that's kind of how I started. I didn't plan it. I don't know if anyone really does, but yeah, that's where I started. And then moving into where I'm at today, long story, I'll try to keep it short, but I was at a corporate, very large scale BPO for about 15 years, and just kind of got tired of the slow pace. My husband's a software developer, so he worked in startups, and as soon as he started working in startups, I immediately saw his happiness level just skyrocket. So I'm like, I want to do that. So I started working for a startup BPO, and they were e-com. COVID hit, so the business just grew tremendously. And while I was working in a biz dev role, we were adding so many clients that we didn't have enough people in operations to really launch all the different programs. So I really cut my teeth there by being able to launch programs, build workforce management, migrate people from one system to another, and just really get dirty, my hands dirty in the business. And from there, I made a change, and I was either going to work for a new BPO in the sales role, or, you know, my husband had this great idea. He said, why don't you just start out your own thing? And I said, because it's very, very scary. And where would I even start? So I started the company April of 2021 last year, and I am so grateful for it. I'm so grateful for the people that I work with. And yeah, that's where I'm at today from working in the call center many moons ago.
So a few things I want to touch on. Are you still in Columbus?
I am.
Do you know that you're the second person from Columbus to be on this podcast? I don't know if you know Travis Kernut, Volley Communications, but...
I don't, but I need to connect with him.
We'll have to get you in contact with him. He was on the show quite a few months ago. Great guy, definitely in your area, and a big Blue Jacket fan. Right? That's the hockey team?
Yeah, it's the hockey team. They're diehards here. Yes.
Yeah. Big. The other thing that I'm curious about is how much the change in the level of cloud availability when it comes to telecom solutions made it lowered that barrier of entry for you to start your own business as a BPO?
That's a great question. I would say 10, 15 years ago, if I wanted to start out, I would have no clue. I would need an entire IT department to stand something up. The modernization of some of these systems and the lower barrier to enter. I mean, there's systems that I don't have a tech background, but they make them so intuitive that someone like me can say, go into a Gorgeous and set someone up and get it to a really high level, or even move someone over from a Zendesk to a Gorgeous or to a customer. And that makes things 100 times easier for people like me that don't have the background in ACDs and cloud and, you know, all the infrastructure that comes along with it. Back in the day when I was pitching contact center services, I could barely speak to it. You know, I would barely be able to answer all the questions that people had. So yeah, I wouldn't have really been able to do anything back then, at least not without a solid team of experts to be able to stand it up. So now, you know, we really focus on working with startups because we feel like with startups, they're going to be moving fast. They're not necessarily going to have a person that's dedicated to building a team, building up processes, standing up a system. And I think that's really fun because it's something that, you know, anyone can really do if they just go into a tool and learn a little bit about it. And so that's I think it's really fun too. And that's part of in the economy that we're in, where there's so many people starting up new businesses. I love that people are given the ability to do that without all these other layers of the business that really make you drive up costs. So you're not necessarily able to even be competitive. And it's a lot easier to start up something right now, I think, than ever. So yeah, it's great. It's a great industry that we live in right now. If you're trying to start something up and doing it with a fairly low, a fairly small team, I guess. It's just me in the US here today. Right. And I mean, there's incredible talent in the Philippines and, you know, in other locations that you can really lean on to build out the other pieces of the organization.
Yeah, that's the other thing too, right? You can quickly become a global organization, or at least an organization based out of multiple workforce based out of multiple countries, because that's just where we are from a technology standpoint today.
Yeah, Absolutely. And the security technology that's out there as well. 10 years ago, I couldn't stand up a security infrastructure, but today I can easily set up a virtual desktop and add on any type of layer of security for people that want to work from home. And most of the people that when we survey our team members, that's probably the number one thing is I get to stay working from home with my family. I can have meals with them. I can have that work-life balance, especially in the Philippines when, you know, you're hearing people driving 2 hours to get to work and just not a lot of like healthy environments and lifestyles having to do that. So to be able to allow them to use their own device in many cases, add that layer of security on top and giving them that benefit, that allows us to grab top talent, especially with the government incentive now. And I understand the incentives. I think it's a good thing for the economy over there, but also people don't want to go back. I mean, I don't want to go back to an office, right? I don't know about you, but I want to give them the opportunity to stay in that environment for as long as they can.
Yeah. So really what we wanted to talk about today was not necessarily all of that, but is definitely related to that. And sure. When we first got talking, I asked you what you were passionate about. So tell me what you're passionate about.
Yeah. So, and it's not necessarily always been my passion or something that I've always focused on, but over the last few years, it's really kind of came front and center for me. And I've realized that it's really the foundation of our business today. And that's leading with kindness, with heart, with the utmost respect for the agents, the frontline people that are on your teams. And when I first started CXtimer, you know, it was, I kind of need a job and I want to stay in this industry and it's fun. And, you know, let's see where this goes. But then I started to hear the stories of the agents and what they've gone through and small things that we would do within our organization that we didn't really think were, you know, big deals. Like, for example, when the storm Odette hit last year in the Philippines, and it took out all our team scattered throughout the entire country, but it took out a portion of our team, and they were reaching out to me on Slack saying, Sandy, I hope we don't get fired. Usually when this happens, we lose our job. And it just, like, all the stories that I hear really break my heart. So it gives me, over time, it's given me more purpose and more of a mission to create an environment and create a place where they can work, they can have fun. But by the way, they're treated like humans and they're not treated like numbers. They're able to afford a lifestyle for their family where they don't have to work three jobs and they don't have to make sacrifices. And you know, that really is the core foundation of what we're trying to build here. Our mission is to change the way customer engagement professionals are treated. And I think it really starts with first, I mean, you got to pay them well. So for us, it's easier to do that because we don't have, you know, CFOs, CIOs, we don't have that layer that a lot of companies have to have. And so the overhead is much lower. We're able to pay them double than what they're used to getting paid. So, I mean, that's the first piece of it that usually makes everything else a little bit easier, right? And then it's just hiring people that align with how we want everybody else to be treated. So, I mean, managers, when we're promoting people within the organization, like the number one thing that we look for is how do they treat people? And you can kind of see that, like from a remote environment, you can see in Slack how they're talking to their peers, how they're talking to people within the organization. That's a really good first place to look. And then from there, it's just the conversations that you're having with them. And not everyone always works out. We try, like when I first started out, I started hiring people and I was just, you know, doing my thing on Indeed and chatting and having conversations and trying to identify, you know, the best English, the most experience. But alongside of that, just using a little bit of intuition and trying to identify people that really have good hearts and are good people and care, and they're going to treat other people with that, with the care that we're trying to implement here. And that's not always going to give us that exact characteristic, but we pretty quickly find out. And I think some people, they've just been in the environment for so long that they can't train their brains to rethink how things could be, because I think a lot of those, a lot of the industry, they drive numbers and they're breathing down your necks and they're just treating people like children, essentially. And when you take that away and you start treating people with kindness and you you trust them, the metrics are going to be there, if not higher. And of course, the attrition is lower, so there's so many benefits to it. And it's just a simple practice, but it makes just all the world of difference.
So I hear what you're saying, but the naysayers will say, Sandy, that's great, right? You want to be nice to people and you want to hire nice people. Sure, sure. But you're going to hire people that are going to take advantage of you if you're not paying attention to the metrics and you're not managing every number. And I just don't believe that that's the case. So what do you say to those people?
I love that question, Rob, because I was one of those people when I came into that startup that I had mentioned earlier, and all the practices were upside down. And I was like, you guys don't watch over them. You don't like make sure that they're doing their jobs every minute of the day. And I said, no, we just trust them. And I mean, there's still accountability that has to happen. And we still, you know, review and coach, and but we do it from a point where we're leading with support and with kindness, and doing that in a way where we're not leading with fear. I've been in so many positions where, and I think it's, I don't wish on anyone that they have a boss that leads with fear, but I think it's a good learning opportunity. I think it allows you to grow and come out of that mindset. A lot of people have been in those positions and it just doesn't, it never breeds anything good. It demotivates, it makes people react and do things that wouldn't necessarily have been done if they would have just had a leader that was supportive and there for them. It's such a killer of so many different things. So yeah, I would say it's hard to talk about it and share how it can still be done, how you can still hit these KPIs and do amazing and deliver the best results, best in class customer service for your partners, or just even your internal centers. I kind of feel like people have to see it and they have to be a part of that. And they have to, I can tell people all day long, like, just be nice to your agents and be supportive and be there for them. And the metrics are going to be there. But until someone actually sees it firsthand, I think it's really hard to describe and to get someone to really understand that it can work and it does work, because we've all, a lot of us have been in that industry, the industry for so long, they've seen that's just the way it is. That's how we get those numbers. That's how things work. Until you see that for yourself, that it can still work and maybe even be better, I think it's hard to kind of illustrate that without actually showing them and giving them a firsthand experience of it.
Yeah, I think, right. I mean, what you're talking about is culture, and the culture of an organization. If you've only experienced one type of culture, it can be really shocking to enter into a completely different type of company culture. And you may not believe at first that it's even real. But a lot of companies focus on, and this was easier to do when there were so many more companies in a brick and mortar environment, to focus on the physical things in the environment rather than focus on what really drives the culture, which is the people and the leaders. And I can hear from you, right, that it's coming from the top down. And I just had a conversation with Luke Jameson, who was on the show. And something he said that I've said forever is no one wakes up in the morning thinking, well, I want to go to work and just do an awful job today. Like, that's just not a thing. People don't right. do that. And yet we have leadership in some organizations who seemingly come to work thinking that that's what their people are trying to do, is just do a bad job.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is, to your point, Rob, it is hard for some people to there have been some occasions when I've had conversations where people have been promoted into management and, you know, they were kind of drinking the Kool-Aid, but then we found out really quick that they can fall back into those old habits and those old ways because that's the way their mind is kind of trained to think and to act. And we can talk and we can share and we could show them how things can work in a different way. But for some people, it just doesn't. I mean, there's few, right? Because a lot of people are seeing how it's working and, you know, they're buying in to the fact that I have a team of people, and if I treat them a certain way and I support them and I coach them and I, you know, educate them and give them my time, then they can do amazing things. But there are some people that still have a hard time realizing that that can be a thing, and they want to go back to those old habits and build all these policies that just drive fear, which, don't get me wrong, Rob, policies are great. And I feel like you still need to have structure, but you can have the structure without having that fear driven type of philosophies where people are just so scared to do anything because they feel like any minute they're going to get jumped on for doing something that they did wrong. Well, all along the same time, they're doing all these other amazing things that in the past, maybe they weren't recognized for. So yeah, it's, you can't talk everybody into it, but I think when most people see what we're doing, and a lot of people also, I mean, 90% of the people that come work for us, they're referrals. So they just hear from their family members and their friends that this place is different. Come check it out. It's awesome. And, you know, most of those people that already have that type of attitude and those types of hearts, they tend to be around those other type of people and bring them in. So that works out to our advantage as well. But yeah, it's not for everyone, but it's most people like it.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit about this with the storm and people being set back and that fear of losing their jobs. I wonder what other examples you could share without naming names of situations where, right, you recognize fear, that this is a way of leading through fear, and maybe how you approach that today differently than maybe that was approached in the past.
Yeah, I feel like there are a lot of little things that kind of come to mind. Things like being late by 5 minutes. Someone once told me that the agents in their center, why would they reprimand them for being late for 5 minutes when if the VP's late by 30 minutes because, you know, whatever, they got stuck on the bus or something happened, nobody's going to say anything to them. And I totally understand it's different. You've got to have coverage, but we build out our coverage so that if someone's late, or if someone has an emergency, if they're sick, if their kid's sick, they're not going to get penalized for that because that's life. And that's the life that we live in. And I want to build out an environment where I'm not being treated any differently than an agent would be treated. And I'm not being spoken to any differently than an agent would be spoken to as well. Cause I mean, we're really like, I don't really like to be called boss or like, so a lot of times when I introduce myself, I'm just a part of the team. And that piece right there, I think, is helps our leaders to break down any potential ego that they could possibly have when they're building out their teams. But some other things, Rob, that come to mind would be some crazy contracts that I've heard people sign where they aren't allowed to get pregnant, or they aren't allowed to eat street food or things that could potentially take them out for the day, or, you know, for months if they have a child, which seem like very dated and very like 18th century, but it's happening today. I don't think it's being vocalized, but it's happening and it's sad. And there's tons of different things, but I see it throughout. I've seen a lot of different circumstances throughout the last year. People that have been, you know, hospitalized, where in the past they would typically just get fired if they're out for a week, where they just didn't have enough money to even pay those hospital bills. Our team comes together. We send funds. We're able to do that. And also, by the way, when Odette hit, I think it's also a part of, like, going back just a step, I think as a BPO, it's also the clients that you partner with. They have to align with that philosophy, because if they don't, it's going to be really hard for you to operate with, you know, a fear-led client or a client that just doesn't necessarily align with that. We are very, very lucky. One of our clients, when Odette hit, I mean, all the agents on our team are a part of their organization, part of their family. They treat them with the most respect and kindness. And they all decided to pull together funds to send to the people that were affected. They sent out an email and said, "Hey guys, this is what happened. These people are without power. They're having, you know, they're trying to get water, they're trying to get food. And, you know, what percentage of your paycheck, if any, would you like to contribute to send over there?" So they were able to raise $12,000 to send to our employees that were affected by that storm. So that, things like that, it helps us drive that mission within our organization. And I know it's not always like, you know, I've been in roles where I've been in BPO and, you know, any client is a good client, right? So it's great to be able to be choosy and picky with the types of partners that we work with that are on the same page.
I think this is something that we don't talk about enough in the industry, right? And that is the choice of clients and how, what does that relationship look like? Because some people seek out a BPO for partnership and expertise, and this is not part of our core business that we want to focus on, but we know it's a necessary part of our business and you know how to do it, so can you help us with it? And other people, other clients may seek out a BPO because they want to be able to say, "That's not my problem, you deal with it," right? These are the expectations. And so, right, I'm not gonna pay you, or I'm not gonna pay as much if you don't meet these performance criteria, without ever thinking about, well, okay, these are people that I'm working with too, and these are unusual circumstances, whatever the case may be, right? They don't look at it as a partnership. They look at it as, I'm paying for a service, you provide that service, and if you don't provide it, then I don't want to pay for it. And that's a very different relationship, and it absolutely impacts the way that you do business as a BPO.
Absolutely. It impacts the customer experience at the end of the day, but I don't think a lot of people look that far, or at least the folks that are in partnerships where it's more of like a client vendor relationship. At the end of the day, it's just like a necessary cost for them. And a lot of times they're preaching customer experience. We've got to get highest CSAT we possibly can and customer first, if they're not also thinking agent first. I don't feel that they're going to have, they're not going to meet that goal. And there are, the thing that I've seen though, Rob, in the last 6 months or so, as I've had conversations with other companies that, you know, talking to other professionals in the industry that are building out their teams. And I found like a little bit of a change. And I don't know if it's COVID has softened people's hearts or just the environment that we've been in the past couple of years. But back, you know, 4 years ago when I was pitching contact center sales and come work with us, it was really hard. And it was a lot of people, like you'd mentioned, focused on cost and focused on, you know, just do it. And by the way, if you don't do it, then we're going to, you know, we're not going to pay you a certain amount. Now, I don't know if I'm just lucky, but I'm having a lot of conversations with people who are building these teams out within these brands, and they're very aligned with. So I feel like there's a little bit of a transition that's happening within the industry, which is amazing. I love it. And it's absolutely what we needed, whether it be BPO or internal contact centers. But people are thinking more. I mean, I think maybe we've talked about, I'm sure you've probably had conversations with people in the past like years or so where it's like culture, agent first, customer experience first. But a lot of that is just, you know, words on a piece of paper. And I feel like now people are, there's a shift. And I think that that's going to be very impactful over the next 5-10 years as we see organizations build out in a little bit of a different way that maybe only a percentage of teams have seen in the past.
Yeah, I agree. I think part of that is driven by the demand, right, from the population of agents or people willing to do that work who are now saying, you know what, we think you can do better, right? We want a better work environment because they can find better work environments. And I think you're right. It seems like something, and I think we all recognize, right, the last couple of years have just been unprecedented in our lifetimes. And it's changed the way a lot of people think and approach things, including work. And it seems like people are looking at, some people are looking at work in a very different way and bringing some emotion, some heart to it.
Absolutely. And I once heard, I'm not a big book reader, but I am a big book listener. But Brené Brown, she shared a quote once that many years ago, the workforce was always, you know, it was first you were going to be successful if you were leading with your body and your hard worker. And then it was, you know, many years after that, it was leading with your mind and who's the smartest, they're always going to be ahead. And now we're in a decade or a century, I hope, where she mentioned it, that when you're leading with your heart, that's really where a lot of these successful businesses are hitting. I mean, they're focused on what really matters in the day and life that we're in. And I'm so glad that that's kind of where we're at right now. And there is emotion behind it and there are feelings. And I remember, you know, sitting in a conference room with CEO telling me I'm not allowed to cry. And you're probably just crying because you're pregnant. And as a woman, yeah, that was a fun one. But to be allowed to have those emotions and to be encouraged to have those emotions, that's really what employers need to be. I mean, that's really what people need to allow their team to do these days. I mean, everyone's brought up differently, right? So some parents bring up their children that you're not allowed to show emotion and it's bad and you're weak if you do. But wow, isn't it amazing that when you are able to show emotion and you are able to be your true self and also do an amazing job at work, at the end of the day, who doesn't want to be in that type of environment? A lot of those businesses, I think that still have those philosophies, I don't know that they're going to be around for a long time. Especially like you mentioned with the competitive environment that we're in right now, people can work anywhere they want and have amazing benefits. And I don't think it's the benefits, that we thought about 10 years ago, right? Where it was, we have a beer cooler and we have a ping pong table. Now it's more about how are you treating people at the end of the day? Are you treating them like an adult? Are you giving them support? Are you paying them fairly? Are you, giving them benefits that really matter to them in the environment that we're in versus benefits that we thought mattered 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah. Well, it has been an absolute honor to have you on the show and talk about this topic. I think it's really important, and I'm glad that we got to spend some time delving into it further. So thank you.
Absolutely. And thank you, Rob. I really appreciate this. I can't thank you enough for inviting me, and I am looking forward to listening to the other podcasts that you're putting out. Seems like you've been just very, very busy doing this, but I think it's great that you're breaking down some of these walls and allowing folks to share their story in the industry. I think it's great.
Well, thanks. It's been a great journey for me. It's a learning experience. And at the end of the day, I love getting to learn from other people who have such a vast array of experiences and knowledge and perspectives that are, new to me. And that, I think, makes me a better person, and hopefully it allows the people that are listening to take something away every episode.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks, Sandy. I look forward to talking to you again. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Rob. I appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day as well.
Next in Queue is brought to you by Happy 2 and is produced by me, Rob DeWire. Visit happy2.com, that's happitu.com, for more information. Our theme music is courtesy of Big Red Horse. Check them out at bigredhorseband.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe in iTunes or your favorite podcast app and rate it. But more importantly, please tell just one person about this podcast. Word of mouth is the best way for people to discover new content. And if there's a topic you want me to tackle, drop me a message on LinkedIn.